Welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Producer Mike Kiris is here, and we are at Sports Authority Studios at Winter Park getting ready for the 2012 regular season. The first game is right on the horizon, and who better to have join us as the guest this week than Paul Allen, radio voice of the Vikings. What's up, Paul?
Let's see, who's better, Adrian Peterson, Jared Allen, Chad Greenway, Antoine Winfield? But you know what? You must have gone alphabetically, so you'll start with Allen.
No, I'll tell you what, though. You're one of the only double guests that we've had on the Wobcast. This is your second appearance, and you were the first guest.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Again, you went alphabetically.
Wobcast immortality.
A's. Yep, and if you interviewed yourself, you'd be last because you're a W. But
correct.
Very nice to be here at Vikings.com and the Wobcast, and super excited for the football game this weekend.
That's the thing. I mean, we've done Wobcasts every week for the whole offseason. The first one was right after last season.
Yep.
So every show has been in anticipation of the regular season starting.
What was the Wobcast during the lockout?
We didn't have them.
Oh, you didn't have one?
No.
Oh, after last season.
Yes.
Oh.
Right. Thank God. That would have been boring.
Yep.
So now we're here. We're basically on the eve of the regular season. This is an exciting time, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. It's great, especially off the preseason, because you saw some good things in the preseason that genuinely excite somebody like me up to the regular season. And in thinking the Vikings passing game is going to be better than it was last year,
yeah,
maybe eventually more explosive. You know, from a play-by-play standpoint, that excites you. Defensively, I don't believe we'll give up 28 points a game the way we did last year. So I'm curious to see, you know, what the 4-3 base defense looks like compared to the nickel, how Harrison Smith plays, when Josh Robinson plays.
Yeah.
Antoine Winfield threw five games last year before he hurt that neck, the collarbone. He was averaging about 7.5 tackles a game, had a tackle for loss a game, and an interception.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Antoine Winfield fan. He's nearing the end of his career, so I'm going to cherish every moment with number 26.
We're going to get into the Jaguars a little bit later, but first I just want to talk about the team generally. You and I talked all offseason about this offseason being about Christian Ponder and his development. And we're hearing from coaches and from all the right people that he's making progression, and we're saying it on the air, and we're saying it on Vikings.com, and we're writing it. But as we get to the early part of the season here, what are some things that we can watch for, or what will tell you that Ponder has indeed progressed?
Making it look to all of us at some point like the game comes naturally to him. In other words, if you put A to get to B to get to C, but then all of a sudden somebody jumped in between B and C,
yeah,
make D happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it happen. Just find something, find the right receiver, even if it's in double coverage, like Favre used to do with Sidney, and try to make a play. And run when you need to run, but not because you feel like you have to run. And just handling the pocket with composure. You know, we saw in the Bills game with that nice defensive line, he got hit twice early in the game, and he bounced up both times. But those were preseason sticks. You know, he's going to get blindsided here occasionally in the regular season. And, you know, I think it's fair to look at Christian off the way things finished for him last year, specifically in that Redskins game where he just absolutely got bludgeoned.
Yeah.
To see Christian get hit, bounce back, have it be second and 12, and then he gets a first down because he's not rattled.
Right.
That's key to me.
And you certainly hope that doesn't happen a lot. He was sacked 30 times in 11 games. But we drafted a left tackle fourth overall. So you got to hope that those numbers go down with Matt Khalil, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. And you know, on the 9 to noon show at KFAN.com, people, you know, think that because it's the cheerleader covenant or I definitely want the team to win every game. I don't hide that.
No.
But what I say, I mean. I mean, if I think the team's going to be 5-3 or 6-2 at the midway point, it's not because I need to help Mr. LaCroix sell tickets. That stands on its own merit. I legitimately believe we go 2-2 or 3-1 through the first four, and then we go 4-0 or 3-1 through the second four.
Sure.
And another thing is I truly believe off the offensive line comment that you brought up, I think the Vikings will have the best offensive line in the NFC North by the end of the season. Some people may think it's preposterous. Some people may think it's too over the top with hope selling. But Matt Khalil already is the best left tackle in the NFC
division.
North.
Correct.
Charlie Johnson is not the best left guard in the NFC North at this moment. But with Khalil next to him and then Sullivan next to him, I believe, we might have the best center in the NFC North.
Sure.
Dominic Raiola's a veteran. He's extremely scrappy, you know, but John Sullivan's hitting a good part of his career. Jeff Saturday, you got to give him a lot of credit.
He's in Green Bay.
The season, he plays for Green Bay. He used to play for the Indianapolis Colts. You got to give him a lot of credit. You know, he has a ton of equity. And then you have Roberto Garza, a Division II guard who's going to be center for the Bears for a second consecutive year. I respect all of them, but I'll take my chances with Sullivan. Right guard spot goes to Green Bay with Josh Sitton. And then the right tackle spot, I would give it to Brian Bulaga right now. Mm-hmm. But Phil Loadholt's in a contract year.
Yeah.
And Phil can maul you
yes.
if he's consistent.
I think Phil looks trimmer. He looks like he's in better shape. And in speaking with Jeff Davidson this offseason, you'll agree. I think our offensive line coach, Jeff Davidson, it's almost like he's on a mission to improve Phil's game.
Because
he had such a good rookie season. Then he came with two seasons that weren't quite as good. I think that Jeff Davidson and Phil are on a mission this season. I think he's going to be a lot better.
Yeah, you also have the trickle-down effect with positivity or negativity. I mean, when things are going as well as they did in 2009, Percy Harvin's rookie of the year. John Sullivan is a center for the first time in the NFL in his career. He plays every game. Phil Loadholt plays 15 of 16, only missing the Rams game.
Yep.
So many things were elevated that year. Then we fall off in 2010, and a lot of things fell off play-wise on both sides of the ball in 2010 then 2011. So Phil needs to be consistent. This is a contract year for Phil Loadholt. And for him to take care of himself, his lineage, and everybody around him for the next X amount of years, it behooves him to play really well, and I think he's up to it.
This is the season preview edition of the Wobcast, and PA is the guest. You know PA from 9 to noon on 100.3 KFAN, KFAN.com. You know PA because he calls our games on the radio. He joins us on the Wobcast. We're going to get into Jacksonville in a little bit, but I still want to talk about the 2012 preview. We're not going to have Jerome Simpson early in the season for the first three games.
That sucks.
Yep. And you and I have talked about how we think we can go 2-0. We think we can go 3-1. If we're able to do that, it's because we found a way to get along offensively without Jerome. So how do we do that?
Excellent question, because we heard so much about the tight ends in the offseason, you know, but then we didn't see much from Kyle Rudolph
right.
in the preseason. We saw none of John Carlson. He was hurt. And we saw a lot of meat and potato stuff with Red Ellison. You know, and then at times we saw Percy Harvin go in motion, and we never saw Percy in the backfield. So in doing this as long as I have, those are indicators to me, without Jerome Simpson, we're going to see Percy Harvin all over the field in the regular season, most likely including in the backfield. He'll go in motion. I think when you have matchups against certain safeties, certain teams with certain safeties, you can do a lot of damage with Kyle Rudolph. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to have to maximize what you can get in the middle of the field when they give it to you, but you're going to have to find a way to do things outside, because I think the San Diego Chargers' third preseason game was a little bit of a harbinger or barometer for what we can expect to see beginning with Jacksonville, in that Jerome Simpson didn't play in that game, either did Adrian Peterson. So now two of your fastest three offensive guys are out.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian will play. Jerome won't play till we go to Ford Field. So now we have to figure a way with Percy Harvin, receiver du jour, or Adrian and his cutbacks to make something happen outside,
yep.
or they're just going to cloud the middle of the field, and it's going to make it really difficult.
You know, and in a way, it's kind of a it's kind of a positive for our offense in a way. I mean, obviously you're going to miss Jerome Simpson, but you're going to have to figure out a way to get it done without him for three games. And then by the time you start developing trends and tendencies and habits, Jerome's going to come back into the mix. It's going to mix everything up for us, and we're going to do things differently. It could be a positive once we get past the first 3 weeks.
I think it's an excellent take, because it's going to afford you the opportunity to work on some things that may be a little more uncomfortable than you want to do. But you know what? If you look at the early games of the season, Jacksonville isn't the kind of team most teams blow out. I mean, they lost a lot of games, and I'm sure they got blown out a few times. But defensively speaking, and the fact that they're a ball control type offense, they want to hold the ball and keep the score down. We want to keep the score down. So does San Francisco. I can't believe Indianapolis wants to get into a shootout with anybody,
right.
defensively speaking, and with Andrew Luck at this stage of his career. So you look at three teams without Jerome Simpson who look like the games are all constructed to be low-scoring games anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jerome comes back against Detroit suspect secondary. You got that 4-3 on the outside. They have no film on it, and it opens everything beginning game four. You see, that's why I believe in the second patch of the season with Tennessee, Arizona, and Tampa here and at Washington, I truly believe we go 3-1 or 4-0 during that patch, getting us to 6-2 or 5-3 at the midway point.
And then you'd have a young team with a lot of confidence.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing.
With some veterans who, by the way, are very good.
Right. And most of those veterans are on the defense. And before we get to Jacksonville, one question defensively. Coming into the offseason program, I was concerned about what we were going to do at middle linebacker. And it wasn't because I didn't trust Jasper's ability. It was just his health. But I think he's turned a corner in that regard. I think he's played really well in the preseason, and I feel a lot more confident at that spot than I did 6 months ago.
How do you feel?
You
know, this is with all due respect to Jasper. I just haven't seen it. I mean, when he filled in for EJ at the end of the 2009 season, he gradually got better game by game, and I think you can credit him for that. And obviously he wasn't such a plug that it slowed you from getting to the NFC title game. But the thing is, so many teams pass so frequently now that he'll be on the field maybe 30-35% of the time. Mm-hmm. So I just need to see it. You know, when you go against Jacksonville, they want to run Rashad Jennings. They want to run Maurice Jones-Drew. Then you play Indianapolis, they're going to want to throw the ball. And they're going to want to throw it to that rookie tight end, Reggie Wayne, swing it to Donald Brown out of the backfield. I don't think game two is a big Jasper Brinkley game, but I think games one and three are.
Yeah.
So we're going to figure out immediately where we stand with him, because you know the NFL offensive coordinators are going to try to test him in the passing game.
Sure.
While you have your 4-3 base defense out there, we're going to pass into it.
Yep.
And then when you take him off and you bring in maybe Josh Robinson, A.J. Jefferson, Aaron Henderson stays, Harrison Smith, Mr. O'Raymond, we're going to run into that.
Sure.
Because we want to make sure those guys take good angles, because some of them didn't last year. So as complex as it is, it's kind of the way I think that they're going to attack us this year.
You're listening to the Wobcast. PA is the guest. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Let's get into Jacksonville real quickly. A couple questions here. Who concerns you more on the Jaguars team, MJD or Blackman?
Excellent question, because Maurice Jones-Drew and missing everything in the offseason, I can't possibly see him being the same guy. You know, it's like with Adrian Peterson's inclusion in this game, assuming that he does play, I think Adrian's going to be closer to what he was when he was good last year than what people think he will be if he only carries it like five times, because he's been working so hard with the team through organized team activities, mini camp, training camp, and the preseason. Maurice Jones-Drew, just like Brett Favre, I mean, he just jumped off the truck, and then he got in there the week leading up to the season. At least Favre, when he would come here, it would be 3 weeks, 4 weeks before the season. So he got a full complimentary run up to game one. I'm going to say Justin Blackman because, you know, in some film we watched for Vikings game plan, the Care 11 show, Ben Lieber, the former linebacker, via the film, showed how Justin Blackman makes his cuts at full speed. And that just does not happen frequently in the NFL. Now, with the good ones, it does. And he's going to be a good one. So I say for this week, Justin Blackman.
Defensively, you know, we're going to come in and it's going to be Rashad Jennings who starts at running back, and it's all MJD is going to be a third down back. I think once we get to halftime in the second half and it's rubber meets the road time, I think our defense is going to see MJD almost every snap out there.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was earlier.
Yeah.
And it also wouldn't surprise me if Adrian Peterson carries the ball 10 times or more.
Yeah.
You know, my opinion on the radio has been, from watching Adrian here, knowing how freakishly well he recovers from things, I think he's as close to 100% as you're going to have him. And you can't play from a fear standpoint. Mm-hmm. You're either going to play him or you're not. You can't sweat the knee getting hurt again. It's different with Jacksonville because conditioning, I feel, legitimately is a concern for Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah.
And now you get into the regular season speed of things, and it might be like Chris Johnson last year. You know, where Chris didn't necessarily get hurt, but I'd worry that Maurice Jones-Drew is going to try so hard that he's going to pull something, and it's going to be a problem for the balance of the season. But nevertheless, he is one of those freakishly good athletes. He's extremely tough to find, and I think he'll probably play the majority of the game.
The Vikings traditionally have a good home field advantage. We were only 1-7 at home last year, though.
Right.
I think that was an aberration.
A little bit.
When the team is playing well, the fans are into it, and it's a tough place to go and play.
Yeah.
Do you think you have Corey Chavis on your show? You have different guys who have a good perspective on this on your show. weekdays 9 to noon. Do you think that Blaine Gabbert, the quarterback Jacksonville took in the first round a couple years ago when we took Ponder, is he a guy that we can rattle playing at Mall of America Field?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think you can rattle their offensive line too, specifically on the right side where they have some injuries. Now, Maurice Jones-Drew, if they do choose to play him a fair amount because he is one of the NFL's elite backs, he's coming into an offensive system that he just learned within the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that means now you got to deal with his blitz pickup and the cadences and the audibles and everything with him. Justin Blackmon, extremely good, but he's a rookie. Does it come that fluidly to him? LaRon Robinson, he's a free agent pickup. So they have some things that are not necessarily going to mesh early in the season. From a Vikings fan standpoint, even when we're 3-13 or 12-4 like 09, the crowd can change games here.
Yep.
And when you're looking at a quarterback like Blaine Gabbert, he'll eventually be ready to handle all this, but not this Sunday.
It's a fun atmosphere, isn't it, Mall of America Field on game day?
It's fantastic. I mean, when we're rolling, when the team's playing well and Jared Allen's doing the calf roping bit,
yeah,
and Adrian's
awesome.
Running and Percy's catching, it's fantastic. The place shakes.
Yeah. What's your game day routine for a regular season game? What, you know, you call the games, obviously, mm-hmm. but what do you do before the game?
You know what? I usually get up about 6:30, 6:45, go to the internet, go to theredzone.org, and check on all the recent stories from all the teams around the NFL. Then pop over to a coffee spot, get a double espresso with a French roast charge after putting on the suit, and drive over to the stadium. I like to get to the booth a good hour early to tape all my stuff up, start memorizing numbers, start hanging with you, talking about the game. Then we start the pregame at 10 a.m. with Greg Coleman and I on the plaza, go from there down to the field, machinate on the field, try to figure out what's going to happen, get some sneaky conversations, continue with the pregame at 11 o'clock with Bursich. Then the players are all on the field.
Yep.
So that means now it's time to go to the binoculars, like I'm calling races at Canterbury, and instead of memorizing silks, I'm memorizing numbers.
Yes.
And just continue to mash on the adversarial numbers so that I don't have to use my program during the course of the game, my roster.
Yep.
And then we walk up to the game, and we have the national anthem, and it's just when you have the anthem, man, it's just so exciting.
Yep.
And then we kick off, and we win.
Your kind of your trademark beginning is boom. Where did you get that? How did you think of that?
Made it up. Just same thing with a few things that I do in the world of horse racing and, you know, some tricks that I have up my sleeve for football games. But I think it's kind of a cool way to start a game.
All right, man. We got to get rolling. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Wobby.
There you have it. That's our 2012 season preview edition of the Wobcast. Week one, Vikings versus Jacksonville at Mall of America Field. The game is Sunday at noon. Don't miss it. That is it for us today. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. We'll leave you with a hit from the Black Eyed Peas. Take it away. That tonight's gonna be a good night.